5 in the New Testament. And because it's a long reading today, I'd love it if 3 of you would volunteer to read a part of the story with me. So can I have 3 volunteers willing to read? And I promise it's not one of those passages that has all the old Hebrew names that nobody can pronounce. Shouldn't trip you up. Oh, Roger, thank you. And Gloria, would you be willing? You can stay where you are. I'll bring the microphone to you and Jen. Thanks. So we're going to be reading at the beginning of chapter 15, starting at verse 1. And Roger, I'm going to ask you to pick up verse 4 through verse 7, all the way through verse 7. And then Jen, I'm going to ask you to read verse 8 through verse 10, all the way through. It's page 95 in the New Testament. And then, Gloria, I'll have you read the long section, verse 11 through verse 32. Now, all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable.
"Which one of you, having 100 sheep and losing one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders and rejoices. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost.' Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance."
Thank you, Roger. And now picking up at verse 8. Thanks, Jen.
"Or what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one of them, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? When she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost.' Just so I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents."
Thanks, Jen. And then we move to verse 11. Thanks, Gloria.
"Then Jesus said, 'There was a man who had 2 sons. The younger one of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his field to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, and get the fatted calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field. And when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, Your brother has come home, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound. Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him." Then the father said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found."
Oh, thank you, Gloria. Thanks to all of you for those beautiful readings and making the scripture come to life for us. What stood out for me in the reading was music and dancing being in the teaching that Jesus gives about what it is to be church and how that just turns our concept of being church people upside down. And it brought back to mind for me a story that I have heard again and again and again. Some of you may know that my dad, because of some strokes that he's had, has some damage to his brain, and his short-term memory is just kind of shot. So you really never know what you're going to get day to day. But his long-term memory, especially some events that have been just seared into that memory because of how emotion-laden the experiences were, will never, ever be erased for him. And we get blessed when my dad tells us those stories. And one of them is a story that he tells us again and again and again, I think because it has still such an emotional grasp on him, but also because I think there is something in him that wants us to know just how much my mother lost when she decided to marry him. It's a story about when they were just newlyweds and they had gone over to my Grandma Dislin's house. And I knew my grandma's house as a house just filled with love, but apparently not so this day. My dad was in the living room, and then there was a dining room area with a huge table and a huge buffet that separated the kitchen, which was on the back of the house with a kind of screened-in porch off the back, little long, narrow galley kind of kitchen with that old world linoleum and overstuffed cupboards. And my dad heard some arguing and harsh voices and just angry tones coming from the kitchen. And when he went out there a little later, he found my mom in tears, that her mom and her sister were berating her in the kitchen for marrying my dad because he was a Lutheran. And her family was devout Baptist, and for them, for her to have married this Lutheran was to have crossed into enemy territory where they did things like play cards and play music and dance and who knows what else they might be doing. And so they wanted to let her know in no uncertain terms that she had shamed the family and she should be ashamed. And they scolded her until it practically broke her spirit. And when I think about that, I think that's exactly how those Pharisees and scribes probably sounded in this story when they were berating Jesus. Of course, they were talking amongst themselves, but they were doing it loudly enough for everybody else in the area, including Jesus, to hear. In their minds, Jesus had crossed over into enemy territory. He had tax collectors and sinners in the crowds that he was teaching. They adored Jesus, and apparently Jesus loved them too, because not only did he take time to teach them, but he was eating with them. So their snide remarks were intended to shame Jesus into submitting to their rules, just like my grandma and my aunt were trying to shame my mom in her marriage to my dad. They were trying to take Jesus down a peg or two, and they weren't going to shut up until they brought him all the way down. But Jesus was a little tougher than my mom was. He didn't cry. What Jesus did was he told them a story. Actually, he was a lot more like my dad in that way. He didn't just tell one story. He told three stories. He wanted to make sure that they got the point. In the first story, a man loses a sheep. Now, what's one sheep to a man who has 100 sheep? He still has 99 more, right? Well, apparently, according to Jesus, that sheep was worth everything because the shepherd left the other 99 to go find this one. And when he found this one, he didn't scold it and berate it and shame it for getting lost or tangled up in the brambles. No, he loved this sheep. And he was so delighted in finding this sheep that he brings the sheep back and he invites the whole neighborhood in for a party. Well, now that's where things get a little goofy, because 2,000 years ago, if you were going to have a block party and you were a shepherd with 100 sheep, what do you think you're going to serve for that party, right? You're going to have barbecued lamb out on the grill, out on the patio. So something just doesn't quite compute in this story. It's not maybe about the lamb. It's about something much more. So then he goes on and he tells another story. He tells this story about a woman who has 10 coins and she loses one. Well, you lose one out of 10. That coin is pretty dear to you. So that woman understandably turns the house upside down, kind of like Irma Bombeck, until she finds that coin. And then she realizes her house is clean from ceiling to cellar. Might as well have a party. She invites the whole neighborhood in to come and celebrate with her. Well, now you have to figure, if you're hosting the whole neighborhood, you're probably going to spend more than that one coin that you did all that searching for. So again, maybe it's not so much about the coin as it is about something else. So Jesus goes on and he tells a third story. This story is about a son. It's the youngest son in the family and a black sheep, so most of the neighbors probably think, oh, not too much lost there, at least not in the son. What they're thinking matters is that that son took half of the inheritance with him, which would have been unheard of. So they're probably thinking it's more an economic loss for the family, because that half of the inheritance was supposed to be part of the whole inheritance that got turned over to the eldest son in order to provide for that family for the foreseeable future, really into perpetuity. That was the family's security. That was the family's insurance. And instead of criticizing and shaming and blaming that son when he comes back, this father spends even more of the small bit of the inheritance that's left with the ring, with the robe, with the fatted calf. So it's not about the inheritance. It's about something much more than the inheritance. And then when he senses the anger of the adult son or the elder son pulling the older son away, he goes after the older son too, because he knows all relationships are precious. Judging and harshness and criticism and shaming are never, ever, ever needed. It's affirming love with great joy that Jesus teaches. Not to draw lines that divide, but to treat everyone as a precious child of God and celebrate them with all you've got. It's scandalous what Jesus is teaching here. But Jesus is showing people how to put the music and the dancing back into discipleship. It is not about the rules. It is about the relationships. And I wonder, do you think three stories are enough to make that point to his audience? Are three stories enough to make the point to us? Because we need these stories today just as much as they needed the stories back then, or as my family needed these stories a generation ago. I don't know if some of you might be subscribers to the Minneapolis Star Tribune. We actually get the St. Paul Press, so I needed Brian Adams to let me know that there was an article in last Sunday's Star Tribune that I ought to read. And in that article, they quoted a poll reporting that 40% of us in America have a relationship that has been hurt since last November's election. 40% of us have relationships that have been broken or are on the way to breaking. And Brian and I and Kevin Myala, who's chair of our spiritual growth team, started talking about, is there a calling for our congregation to step into that tension to bring some relief and some opportunity for conversation and dialogue? So look for that to come. But we were testing the water on Tuesday night. We had a council meeting. And so I asked council members, just by show of hands, you know, is this a topic that's touching you? 8 out of 10 of us in the room said we had relationships that were teetering in the aftermath of the election with this political polarization that's going on in our country. It is not so different than the polarization that was happening between the Jews and the non-Jews, or the haves and the have-nots, back in Jesus's day and age, the righteous, the sinners. The article quotes a local therapist by the name of Alan Davis, who says that staying in a relationship in times of political polarization requires a commitment to repair the relationship. You've got to hear that. It requires a commitment to repair the relationship, and that commitment to the relationship has to be bigger than your commitment to some political ideology, no matter what the ideology is. Commitment to the relationship must come first. He says, the problem we have is a lack of listening and a cultural belief that relationships are kind of disposable. Kind of disposable. He's talking about relationships with people we love. Rather than be civil, it has become normal to call each other losers and cut people off completely. He goes on to say it's important for people to remind themselves that their bonds go deeper than political orientation. But to do that, to commit ourselves to the priority of the relationship first, will require us to give up our own places of moral superiority. Are you willing to do that? Am I willing to do that? And to let go of our anxious need to always be the right one, or the respected one, or the one affiliated with the right side of a debate. Whenever we feel that holier-than-thou feeling start crawling up from our gut into our throat, we need to question whether we are really following Jesus on Jesus's path. He entered relationships without worrying about holiness credentials, when he stood accused of welcoming sinners, of welcoming the wrong people, he didn't talk about how much he was trying to teach them or how he was exacting pledges from them at the end of his sermons to change their ways. He told stories about the joy of being with them and about going to crazy, extravagant lengths to celebrate his love for them. Crossing lines for love, that's what Jesus did. And I like to think that's what my mom did too. She may have married a heathen, but she and that heathen husband of hers raised three children who have faith at the center of their lives, faith more precious to us even than our precious family. My dad always gets tears in his eyes whenever he tells us this story about Mom, and it chokes me up every time I hear him tell it because his emotion is so great, and my dad is not a guy who ever shows emotion about anything. But he lets himself, or maybe demands of himself, to enter into this painful remembering. Because when he tells the story, it shapes every one of us who hears it to be a person who crosses lines for love. And so I hope and I pray that we will be tellers of these stories of Jesus's, because they will shape us to be people who aren't afraid to cross lines that other people want to draw for us. Judge less, love more, celebrate a lot more. Amen. You know, as we move into our time of sharing offerings, I am so aware that I'm preaching to the choir and that you so understand Jesus' calling to be wildly generous. And so as we pass our offerings today, I'd ask you to say a silent prayer of thanksgiving. And as soon as the offering plates pass you by, if you've brought your commitment card in today to make your annual commitment to Redeemer's budget, say thanks to God for a congregation who is willing to commit so generously to support the mission of this wildly inclusive and inviting congregation. It says volumes, the commitments that each of you make. And every gift, whether it's the size of a coin or whether it's the size of a sheep or whether it's the size of half of an inheritance, all of those gifts do God's work. And as soon as we have all of the commitment cards up here, we'll say a word of prayer to ask God to make sure that these gifts do good and godly work in and through this place. So thanks for your generosity.